and the people who love them.
Hello, this is The Thing About Cars. Thank you for joining us again. We are, as usual, recording in Strongbox West. Today at the table we have...
Becca.
And...
Ben.
And it's me, Mickey. We are going to talk about a variety of things today. On the agenda, I did a little work to my car, the Mazda. We're going to talk about what grounding the throttle body meant and a couple other things around that. Mercedes is rolling out their 300th G-Type truck.
300,000?
300,000.
Or 3 millionth?
3,000. Yeah, 300,000.
Okay.
So we're going to talk about the rising cost of cars. And we have maybe a couple, some of the things we did not address in the past episode, like Ben wants to talk about the Lotus Evora. So let's just jump right into it. Ben, what is up with the Lotus thing?
Well, okay, the only car they sell in the United States right now is the Evora, which is a technically a 2 plus 2. It's more like 2 plus a little package shelf that pretends to be a seat. Mm-hmm. But it's a mid-engine sports car. It's got a Toyota V6 in it. And it seems like every handful of months they come out with a more impressive version of it. I can think of three now in the past year now that they've announced another one. They had the basic Evora, which came out 8 or 9 years ago. It was very good, highly praised for its handling.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Then there was the 310 that came out, I think, last year. Then mm-hmm. there was – no, it was the 400, not the 310. There was the 400, then the 410. Now they've announced the 430. And these are basically just numbered by their approximate horsepower. But what happens each time is they get a little more power and a little bit less weight thanks to more carbon fiber. They're becoming kind of thinly disguised race cars in a way. I think one of them does have like a radio delete option if you want the absolute top whack performance, things like that. But it's almost kind of funny because they announce a new Evora and they think, okay, well, wait a few months, there's going to be an even hotter one. So,
well, what are they doing? Are they just engineering on the fly? Or?
Well, I think it's partly a constant improvement process, but also partly trying to keep us from getting bored because it is the only car they're selling here now. The Elise and the Exige were pulled from the U.S. market a few years ago when the Toyota engine that they were based upon went out of production. It was the only engine in those cars that was U.S. emissions certified.
I see.
You can still buy them in England and Europe with a different engine, but that's the only model they've got in the U.S. now, and it's going to be a few years before the new Elise platform comes out. So they need to keep us from getting too bored with just the one car.
Right.
So they keep cooking up these hotter versions. And I'm not complaining because it's a fabulous car. I would take any of them.
I'm so sad to keep hearing you say Toyota when you're talking about a Lotus, though.
They make a bulletproof, rock-solid, damn good engine.
I think it's just tied to the name.
Which engine?
Well, in the Evora, it is a V6. It is the Camry V6, believe it or not.
Didn't help me any.
Well, but here's the thing. Because in the Elise, they used a 1.8. It was the Corolla 4. Well, hang on. There's more. It had a head on it. It did not have the Corolla head. It was the Corolla short block. It had mm-hmm. a head from Kawasaki, of all people. And it was an extremely fabulous engine in a lot of ways. Well, with the Evora, what they're doing is physically, it's all the Camry engine. It's the head and everything. The difference is the computer that runs it. It's programmed very differently. And with that different programming, it's producing supercar performance.
Next, he's going to say it's a Dell or a compact
computer. No.
Running the Corolla or the Camry.
And Becca, what's wrong with the Toyota engine?
And they have supercharged versions, too.
Yeah. I think of Mom driving down the road to pick up her groceries. I don't think of...
Was she in a Supra? Was she in a Supra?
I challenge you then to open your mind a little bit.
It's just, it's how you think of certain labels. And I don't think of Toyota as a high-performance luxury car label.
Well, consider this. Today's, or yesterday's now, V6 Camry, I don't know. I can still get that with a V6, can't you? It's the Accord. That's right, the Accord.
They're dumping the V6.
But today's V6 Camry is as quick from 0 to 60 as a Ferrari of 30-some years ago.
Besides, again... There's, what am I thinking? There's a couple of sporty models that Toyota's gone through. The MR2, the Supra.
Okay, the Supra.
Even in Camry form, that engine is producing, you know, around 300 horsepower.
No, it's just the name. I'm not saying that they're not capable of making an engine that is sporty, and right. I will give you the Supra, not the MR2.
shall I give Becca a hard time, Ben?
I leave that up to your discretion.
At least you don't have to fix or repair a Toyota daily.
Is that really the best you have?
Well,
really?
No,
that, I mean, that wasn't
even
a logical, yes, that's a problem. That was just a bad joke.
Well, and some of those Elises in Europe are running around with Honda engines, too.
But see, my problem was, as far as import non-muscle car, just growing up.
Right.
Because, like I've said a few times, grew up with the American auto industry.
Right.
My dad was a big fan of GM. So Corvettes, and some of y'all might not think of it, but Bel Airs and, you know, Furies that have the big V8 engines.
Well, the world.
I wouldn't discount. No, it's okay.
As far as any import that I had respect for or actually thought about as a really nice car, Lotus always topped my list. And to hear it put on the same level as a Camry, to me, which is a grocery getter, a family car, ooh, let's impress the boss.
And is also running a NASCAR.
Yes, it is. I must say, there's all kinds of cars that'll make you go, huh? Yeah. Running a NASCAR or other races, too. Trust me, I had a Sentra for a while. That was the SER, which made it the rally edition from the race. It was still a Sentra at the end of the day. So it just.
NASCAR is a big marketing platform anyway. It's not.
But the world changes.
The world changes.
It does. Yeah. But I'm just talking about the way you view a certain brand name.
And that's why some of them do these changes, because they want to expand your perception. They want to change your image of how you think of them.
It's just I.
Are you going to be stuck in the past or move forward with the world?
Maybe I'm just too old. I don't know. It's just how I formed my ideas on things, that Lotus was a lot more untouchable than a Corolla.
They're also a small company that doesn't have a lot of capacity for developing engines.
Wait, are we forgetting that Lotus and Isuzu had their hands in each other? You know, we're holding hands.
That was when Lotus was under GM's ownership.
Yeah.
And one thing Lotus is still doing, they're owned by Proton. I believe they just did another deal for a change of ownership. I don't know all the details. But when they were under GM, you know, they benefited greatly from that global parts bin. You know, everything got updated. Now that they're not under GM, they actually make more money doing engineering for other car companies than they do selling their own cars.
You've talked about that before.
So they've got a lot of know-how. And from all that know-how, they're looking around. They're going, well, who can supply us with a good engine that's going to do the job, that we can certify in different countries, and that we can work with, and that's going to be reliable enough? The choices for a small sports car kind of come down to Japanese engines for the most part.
I agree. I mean, and I know that, all things Toyota aside, what they've done is they've cranked out millions of engines. They refine their processes, and they...
Oh, yeah.
They fix their things, right? So.
And with electronics, they're programmable to deliver anything you want. So marketers listening up, you've just heard a good discussion here for what you guys should be doing your homework
on. In fact, Lotus, if this episode should find its way over to Lotus, please just give us a call or invite us over to, you know, your offices someday. I'm sure we have many observations on the U.S. market that we can share with you.
And we definitely need to be able to test drive these cars just so I can see for myself what this Toyota engine is putting out.
I want to test drive. Just
Toyota, if you're listening up, let's hook Becca up with a V6 Camry. And
just don't call it a Camry. We'll be okay. And really, I have my husband's car crossing my mind, which is a Lexus ES300.
Oh, yes.
And I'm
it's
sorry.
It's a Camry on steroids.
No, this actually, I believe the engine is from the, what is the step up from the Camry? I don't think it's around.
Avalon?
Thank you, the Avalon. And I think it's mostly how he treats it, but the thing is terrible. It is absolutely terrible, but I think a lot of that has to do with care. Okay.
It's maybe the user and not the...
User error.
So, how much was it?
Oh, his mom sold it to us over Blue Book value.
What?
Well, it had been his father's car. His father passed away, and he had been trying to get his hands on something of his father's. It ended up being that car. It's an 03 Lexus ES 300. Yeah, I argued she was charging us more than Blue Book.
Well, sentiment overrides logic sometimes.
Blue Book is based on average condition.
The reason I ask about cost is because I know on our agenda we wanted to talk about the cost of cars.
Yes.
Well, he also got that from her about seven-ish years ago. So it's been a little while. The thing with that, the cost of cars, I had been thinking about another car. And no, I don't want to give up either one of the ones that I have, which will start all kinds of arguments in my household. But recently I had driven up to Michigan to visit my family, and it's something I would like to do more. But, you know, my G8 is comfier on the inside for four people. This particular trip, we had five people in the car, so it wouldn't have worked, plus luggage for that many.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah. Mm. The Mustang, definitely not.
Right.
I have a front seat removed just to get the children in the back seat when I need to. But it pretty much snows 10 months of the year up there.
Yeah.
Both my cars are V8 rear-wheel drive. Not something I want to deliberately put into that situation. So I had been looking at things like a classic Bronco, and there were a couple reasons behind it. Not only so that it'll handle northern weather easier, but also the classic ones had that removable back top. So now it's kind of like the Jeep truck type. Mm-hmm. Have you guys seen the older Broncos with the tops
removed?
Oh,
yes.
You've still got the area up over the driver and the passenger, but now the back end is open, like a large Jeep. There were some other trucks like that.
Yeah.
I really like the idea. Plus, you can throw on the hard top, and you can still have storage room up on top.
Oh, yes.
So, I'm looking at this, but oh my God, I'm trying to find a word that won't be bleeped out to express my shock and dismay over the price of classic Broncos. It's almost in line with classic Mustang. I mean, easily 40. I have seen them going all the way up past 80,000 on some of these.
Have you looked at Land Cruisers?
No.
Those little Jeep-looking Toyota Land Cruisers from the 60s and 70s are now commanding crazy money like that, too.
Because they built them right.
At one of my favorite local haunts for classic cars, there's a classic FJ in there, Toyota FJ.
Yeah.
It's the same thing. They want ungodly amounts.
Yeah.
And I think that car predates me. So.
Yeah. Oh, sure.
So it's blowing my mind. And I understand with some of the Mustangs or some of the Corvettes or, you know, insert your favorite vintage, you know, the Stingrays, the Shelbys, but to just go in and look at a 1972 Bronco, there's no name on it, nothing different about it. What's that? You're smiling about something. Mickey's got something cooking over here.
No, it's good. Go ahead.
He might as well just start stroking his chin with the look he's got. What do you have up your sleeve?
No, you were talking about the Bronco. I'm smiling because I appreciate the old Bronco.
Okay, no more Ford jokes.
Not this.
Don't you have a new one?
Not at this moment. I don't have a new Ford joke.
Let's make up something for Bronco to stand for.
Poor Bronco. And, while we're on Bronco, have you heard that OJ has been granted an early release by the parole board? I didn't mean to. I went way off there.
I wonder where his white Bronco is now. Probably some rich collector owns it.
That's hilarious.
There are stories of people that buy those cars that are in
the there are also weirdos out there who have like a cult following for serial killers or something. It's completely surprising to me and somewhat dismaying, but people do it. Yeah.
I don't know. Do something like life is a box of Cracker Jacks. There's a lot of nuts in them.
That is very true. We got completely off topic there. We were talking about the rising cost of cars.
Right. In another episode, we mentioned the Prelude, which is the forthcoming one, is going to be a bit pricey compared to.
You know, I said at that time that the stuff that I had been quickly reading was saying a mid-30s price tag. That sounds low to me.
Perhaps, but remember the one in the old days was Civic-based and it didn't cost much different to a little four-door family Civic. Now, granted, there is the thing that every company seems to be guilty of, that every single model does this upscale progression through its lifetime, through different generations. which I think is a little ridiculous. Some say it's unavoidable. No, I think it's completely avoidable. Mm-hmm. But also, anything that's got a little bit of performance, you know, used to be there was a such thing as a cheap sports car. Nowadays, if anything is a little quick or a little fun, it has to be a premium product. And I think that's completely misguided.
Actually, the Mustang used to be known as the poor man's sports car.
Sure, yeah.
And it was, in comparison to the other things in the market, as far as the Thunderbird, the Camaros. Well, Camaros came later, but they tried to keep it more reasonably priced.
Yeah.
But nowadays, the cost of not even your Shelby GT500, you just go out to a lot, a car lot, and look at a Mustang GT, I get a bit of sticker shock.
Well, I think also, though, that the market in general, not even just cars, but in general, there's becoming a much bigger divide between the haves and the have-nots.
Oh, yes.
And what you're looking at in terms of the rising cost of these kinds of sports cars is related to the death of the middle class in this country. So that's a huge economic discussion for another day and another topic.
Sure.
But yeah, I think that's kind of what's happening. You remove the middle class and all kinds of terrible things happen. So
plus, I mean, all kinds of other factors go into that, not to get off topic, but the cost of steel. Mm-hmm. For those manufacturers still using a lot of steel, the cost of labor, people increasing the minimum wage, which I'm not saying is bad, but we do see it. The cost of benefits for the workers, the cost of all the materials, it's just so much of it plays in. Plus, the corporation isn't going to back down on their profits. They want to increase it, so every year bump it up, and it's...
On the other hand, there's also a lot of automation and a lot of production efficiency increasing going on, too. So,
but then explain to me the rising cost of classics.
Oh, that's supply and demand, purely, because there are enough people with enough money to drive those prices up.
We should all stop buying them at those prices.
But that's the thing. That's the thing.
No, I understand what you're saying.
You've got a Gen X guy out there who made a whole lot of money in some business. Suddenly he goes, well, what's the car I dreamed of as a child? I can afford to pay, and I can afford to outbid somebody else for it.
Right.
There's a limited supply of the older cars and an increasing supply of affluent people who want them. And that drives prices up. It makes me completely sick and disgusted, but that's supply and demand.
Yeah, I'm poor Gen X, and I even looked at cost for a totally different idea, not for driving up north, the cost of classic VWs.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Those things are going through the roof, and they used to be a couple hundred dollars.
Yeah.
I knew somebody in high school that had one because it was a couple hundred dollars. Yeah. Now, even if it's not a full resto, they're asking crazy amounts of money for some of these. And it just, and Jeeps.
Yeah.
If you guys have looked at Jeeps, just a regular CJ, 70s, 80s, holy cow.
Everything in this world is worth exactly what someone's willing to pay for it.
I think that's the truth. I think that's simply the truth.
I'm going to have to sell my firstborn just to get another card up.
I'm
willing.
Yeah. Well, there's ways. You know, keep your ears to the ground and make enough friends. You come across deals sometimes.
Sure.
It's not easy. You know, there are no guarantees it'll be quick. But
how much does a Mercedes G-Class truck cost?
Oh, I haven't priced the new ones, but they're way up there.
Let's take a look. And the reason I'm bringing this up.
Let's see if I'm right. I think they're going to be 80 plus.
80 plus?
At least.
Okay, now, before I read the actual number to you, I know we read this out as part of our agenda at the start of the show.
I'm going to put down my coffee in case I choke.
Yeah, you might choke. Ben has said he's guessing $80,000 for this car.
I'm going to say more.
Plus.
Yeah, it's plus. So just looking at a basic internet search here, without doing any digging, the first thing that comes up suggests the MSRP on a 2017 Mercedes-Benz G-Class luxury vehicle is $122,000.
Oh, that's more plus than I was expecting.
It gets up to 13 miles per gallon in the city, 14 in the highway, and it has 416 horses, and it weighs, depending on the model, something like 3 tons.
Yeah.
In the order of 3 tons.
The pictures don't really convey the size of it. It is a big, tall thing, yeah.
It's huge and it's tall. But the reason I bring it up is Mercedes has apparently sold or built their 300,000th one of these trucks.
Oh, right? Yeah.
So there's enough people that can afford that.
Well,
who's buying them?
Well, this is over a long period of time, though,
because
this is This is a model family that came out originally, I believe, in the 70s. It was a more utilitarian vehicle in those days. In fact, it had military applications early on.
Right.
And somewhere in the 80s is, I think, when it started becoming a little luxurious. And $300,000, to put that in perspective, that's like what GM manufactures in a week. But for an expensive German luxury, you know, 4x4 kind of vehicle, that is a lot of them.
Mm-hmm. But again, speaking of stigmas with names, we think of more luxury when it comes to a name like Mercedes as opposed to off-road, even if it has built a lot of those in the past.
Yeah.
And apparently they're still largely built by hand.
That does not surprise me.
Yeah.
It's a small product line for them.
Yeah. It's still with that much time and being on the market, 300,000 of them. I'm not lying. I wouldn't mind driving one, but
they have a certain cachet to them. Wheeler Dealers have even done an episode with one.
Have they really?
Now he's saying cachet. No, it's right. I'm just picking on the coupe again.
Well, a lot of I know that they're a choice vehicle for many pro athletes.
Yeah.
Well, because they've got the money.
Yes, they do.
And I'd rather them spend it on the cars than some of the things that get them into trouble. But a lot of the cars nowadays. Did you want to say something to that?
No, I mean, it goes back to the basic idea of, okay, you're buying a car for show and not for, you know, not for any practical application.
Right.
But most cars nowadays, these air quote SUVs, half of them are actually CUVs, which are a crossover, still tacking on the utility vehicle. Most of them couldn't go off-road if you tried.
Right.
And they don't aspire to.
Right.
Exactly. It's more about the look of it. It's like
it's so just many a big car. It's just a big, fat, tall car is all it is.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, the SUVs became popular with soccer moms because minivans became passé. There you go. I used one of Ben's words.
I think more people out there need to own the damn van. You know, they all come into the auto dealer saying, "Well, I really need a minivan, but what can I get that will do the job but isn't a minivan? Just buy the van and own it and be proud of it."
Redesign the minivan. I'm saying it. No, it is.
Have redesigned the minivan.
No, it is still embarrassing to be near one.
What are you talking about? I drove one on a road trip, which we'll talk about in a future episode, but it was great.
No. And we took one up to Michigan.
Yeah.
It was a Dodge
Grand
Caravan, I think. Bells and whistles. My kids loved it.
Yep.
It still looked exactly like a minivan.
Well, what's wrong with that?
And the late model Dodge one will get up and go if you put your foot into it. It will growl and fly down the road.
I never had a problem with that. Even the early minivans.
And it's comfortable.
Dad's early Voyager, which, I mean, sure, it looked like...
Yeah, the early ones were kind of pokey and weird, but
it was still great. It was very versatile. It carried a lot of people in comfort. There was nothing wrong with it.
I drove a rented Dodge van, whatever they're calling the not-so-minivan anymore. Yes, 2 days ago, it was a rental car and a business trip. And, it got up and went. It got pretty good gas mileage. It was very comfortable, good radio, good air conditioning. There was nothing to complain about as a vehicle.
Right.
Well, my mom had, I believe it was a Plymouth Voyager, a 1989. And at one point when my car was in the shop, I borrowed her van. And it would get up and go.
Yeah.
For what it was, it impressed me how much power it had under there.
Yeah.
Now, it still felt like it was extremely top-heavy and it was going to roll over. But for what it was, no, it had good power.
That was built on the K platform.
Right.
Yeah. But it still looked like a minivan.
Sure.
See, I don't have a problem with that.
Okay, I'm
Dave
obviously...
Dave Grohl loves his Honda Odyssey.
Yeah, see?
I'm obviously going all about looks here. There is just, it's again, something attached to it. It's
so
the soccer mom.
You should lower it. You should put blue lightning bolts down the side of it.
No, I have tried to think it. No, if you're going to paint it, you're going to paint it up like the 70s panel vans.
Why not?
And you're going to have...
the shag carpeting inside and the captain's chairs.
Wait, what was
make it a love machine.
What was her name? Tara, I think, from Heavy Metal, riding her Pegasus.
Have a mural of that on the side?
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, you need the Heavy Metal. If I could make it look halfway decent, I would be all about doing something that to a minivan. But it's a minivan.
Well, you know, if we get enough sponsors, maybe Dodge can kick us down a Grand Caravan to do all this with.
That'd be great.
We can have the Thing About Cars mobile and have the mural on the side and all that stuff.
Absolutely.
You know what will help?
What's that?
If there is a minivan race. Seriously. I mean, not quite NASCAR, but yeah, definitely get there. Let's have a minivan race. We have truck races.
We could see, do it.
Why not?
I think that's a cross-country or at least a cross-state race. I think you start in one place and end in another. I don't think that's a track race.
Okay.
You could do it both ways.
You could.
You start talking about that, I start thinking of the Bubblegum 3000, and those had some pretty fancy cars.
Well, you know, there are guys in Japan who are taking the full-size Dodge van, the old front-engine rear-drive V8 van, and actually racing those. It's a big Japanese kind of culture thing now. They call them Dajibans. I guess that's how you say Dodge van in, with a Japanese accent.
Dodge vans.
Yeah.
That's cute.
But there are a lot of young Japanese guys are importing these Dodge vans and racing them.
Right. Well,
drifting them around tracks and all that good stuff.
If any maker of a minivan wants to talk to us about
minivan races,
we welcome that contact. I think that's all we have time for today. Anybody want to touch on anything else before we sign off?
Be safe out there, people.
Yeah, absolutely. Be safe out there.
Watch out for the minivans.
Right. We'll pick up all the other unwanted topics on our next episode, and we'll look forward to joining you at that point. This is, as always, The Thing About Cars. We're recording in Strongbox West. Please check them out at
StrongboxWest.com.
Take two.
Thank you. At StrongboxWest.com.
Exactly. And check out TheThingAboutCars.com.
Right. You know, one of the things that came out on our survey, now that I'm extending our time a little bit here, is that we need better recording equipment. So some respondents to our survey have said things like that. So first of all, if you're listening, please go to our Facebook page and find the link to our listener survey. We need some input from you guys to help improve the show and learn how to do things a little better, that you will find on our Facebook page. And if you think we need new equipment, we could appreciate any contributions you could have. If you can help us get the new equipment, we'd like to hear from you, not the least of which is we have a tip jar that is linked via, I think it's via our iTunes entry, possibly somewhere else, but it's we'll put a link to that on our Facebook page too when we sign off today. Any tips you can send to us, we'll put into new microphones and new gear and stuff like that. If you're into that sort of thing, we have two big condenser mics that are sitting on top of a conference table here in Strongbox West. It's getting the job done, but what we lack is granular control of every person's voice. So I think one of the first things we need to do is give everyone their own dynamic microphone instead of just using two big condenser mics for the table. That, of course, is a major upgrade for us, and we would appreciate your help in making that possible. So having said that, thanks again for listening to us. We'll see you guys soon.
Bye.
Later.
Thank you for listening. This has been The Thing About Cars. We'll see you on the road.